Welcome to Protagonists of Change. I'm Max Lindvall, campus minister at the University of St. Thomas in Houston, Texas, here today with Nicole Lavity, director of campus ministry, and Darnell Miller, Catholic outreach. And we are talking with Father Paul English, the chaplain from the University of St. Thomas, and Justice, Peace, and Integrity of Creation Committee member for the Bazillion Fathers. Today we are talking about the environment and how we are called to care for and protect it. Father Paul shares what he and the Bazillion Order are doing for their part. I'm from Boone, North Carolina, and if you don't know who's talking, this is Max Lindvall, the host of the show. And Boone, if you know anything about it, it's in the heart of the Appalachian Mountains. It sounds like it is too when you hear the words Boone. And I never really realized how much the mountains or anything really meant to me in my life until you leave the mountains. But what's pretty wild to me is there's always this sense of the mountains around me everywhere that I've kind of gone that bring me back to home. And in that, I've really found peace in knowing that God is completely present, especially in the world around me. So some of the examples that I have from this are when I was in college at the Holy Cross College, we went to Uganda in Africa, and I had no clue what I was really stepping into, but I did not think when I was going to Uganda that I'd be seeing some of the largest mountains I've ever seen in my whole entire life. I guess I didn't know much about geography, but when I went there, there's a sense that like mountains were all around us when we were traveling around the country. And there's this really like, it just brought me back home to experiencing like, hey, this is the mountains mean something to me. So then I went back to school and then went to Jamaica, West Indies. And when I thought about going to Jamaica as well, I thought I'd just be on a beach with this island and there wouldn't be mountains all around. And come to find out, I was about 3,000 feet up in elevation, and we were just living in the mountains as well. And there's this sense that just like being in the mountains, it just made me connect back to God and connect back to my home of like, this world that God has created us and put us in, like we need to care for it. And I kept realizing this the more that I kept traveling the world, because then I would go to Ecuador. I went to Ecuador when I was in grad school as well. And I remember this one moment, we were at this school, and to the right, there was this railing. I remember looking to my right, and there was this ginormous mountain there as well. And I just sat there and just prayed, because there was this overwhelming like sense of like, the Lord is here present, and like the beauty of the world, the world that we have around us, and like the mountains that we see, the deserts, the water. It's like when we're able to connect with the world around us, we can find God there as well. And that's really what brought me this sense of peace everywhere that I traveled, is that God is speaking through me, through the nature, through the world around me. And it's through the mountains, and each one of us might have our own thing. So like maybe you're from an area near a river, and like you go to this place and you're like, I didn't know water would be flowing through here. And that water is life. Like the water is life. The mountains bring life. There's all this life, all this world around us. And sometimes we just need to stop and notice where it is around us. And I'm in Houston, Texas now. And it's funny because you don't think of much about mountains, but if you travel 3 hours away, you end up in this hill country with these mountains that you're climbing to the top of. And I do some backpacking now, and just the sense that like there's even mountains here in this place that feels so far from home. I'm 18 hours away from Boone, North Carolina, but mountains still seem to pop up around me. And these mountains, you can't run away from God in this world. Like God is everywhere and is working around us. And these mountains always bring you back.
Father Paul, thank you for taking the time to sit down and talk to me about this important topic.
It's a pleasure, Darnell.
So, Father, tell me a little bit about who you are, what your role is here at St. Thomas, but also in the Bazillion Order.
Okay. Well, last August, I began my participation here at the university as a member of the campus ministry team. I'm the chaplain. And it's something, the campus ministry is something I've been doing for many years in my life, kind of splitting my life between campus ministry and Hispanic ministry. And there's a nice kind of combination here of both of those things with so many Hispanic students. But I have been a member of the Bazillion Social Justice Committee on and off for almost 40 years now. And in the last few years, we've been seeing the importance of the question of this earth on which we live and the concerns that our young people have. And so we actually made a move to change the name of the Social Justice Committee and the focus to a committee on the concerns about our planet, about our Earth. It's, we call it JPIC, which is the Justice and Peace and the Integrity of Creation Committee. And so I've been working with them as we try to strategize in three different phases what we'll be doing as bazillions with regard to this very important issue.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And you said that it's something that you noticed in this younger generation. You're listening to the call of that. And I think, having done ministry for 40 plus years, like, how have you seen just the shift in awareness over the course of the generation just to how we should care for our planet? And like, how has that culminated in Pope Francis's encyclical?
Yeah. You know, for many generations now, I don't know if you're old enough to remember a movie called The Graduate, but there's a moment in that movie where this young man, he's just out of college, and an older man pulls him aside and says, "You want success in life? Plastics." And really, since then, our world has been inundated with plastics and with the whole idea of throwing things away. Mm-hmm. And so we have single-use things. We get plastic bags and straws and all the rest. Plus, all of the industries that make them have really burgeoned in the past 30 or 40 years, maybe 50 years. But what has come with that is an unintended consequence, and that is that the Earth is beginning to really feel the stress and the strain of all that. And, real problems are arising from that. And so, you know, while my generation, you know, the generations after that haven't been too concerned, now the younger people coming up say, "What have you left us? Mm-hmm. You know, what kind of a planet are we going to live on?" I think of I guess she's now about 18, Greta Thunberg, but she says, you know, there is no planet B. And what they're going to have to deal with are things that I'm 65. I probably won't be alive when the worst of things come about, but she certainly will. And young people at our university certainly will. And so it is, since it's my generation and the successive ones that have been part of the problem, we darn well better be part of the solution, mm-hmm. or at least starting to work toward it anyway.
Mm-hmm. And I know in his encyclical, Pope Francis said that one of the things that they were working on addressing was like, oh, the science needs to catch up. But he's come to the realization that it's not necessarily the science, right? It's a change in our behavior. Like you said, we have the single-use plastics. Like, we've created a life, especially here in the United States, of pursuing convenience. Mm-hmm. We use single-use plastics because it's easier. We can streamline our day. We don't have to worry about the washing the dishes, taking care of the things, rinsing, washing, reusing, figuring all that stuff out. It's just like, all right, out of sight, out of mind. And we've operated that way for so long. It's part of kind of like who we are. But how do we begin to address that, right? I know for older generations, like, they couldn't have comprehended what the effects were on the environment. But how do we, seeing what we know now, seeing what the science tells us, start to pivot and start to take charge of what we're called to do?
Yeah. Your question points out something. It's a phrase that this Justice, Peace, and the Integrity of the Creation Committee is using as a kind of central piece, if you don't mind me reading it to you. It's from a guy named James Gus Speth, who's a pretty preeminent individual. He said this, "I used to think that top environmental problems were biodiversity loss, ecosystem collapse, and climate change. I thought that 30 years of good science could address these problems. I was wrong. The top environmental problems are selfishness, greed, apathy, and to deal with these, we need a cultural and spiritual transformation, and we scientists don't know how to do that." And I feel as if, you know, we bazillions and we at this university and any person of goodwill who is willing to look at what Gus Speth saw, all of those real scientific issues, and started thinking about the moral debt that we owe to people going forward, we would find this to be a pretty urgent kind of a thing. So it seems to me it's a dual thing. I think we need to look at what the science is telling us and believe it, because there's a lot of people who don't like to believe science these days. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is to understand that we have a moral debt to pay forward to the young people who are inheriting this world. It seems pretty urgent to me.
And I think this is a position where the Catholic Church can take charge, right? This idea that we have that urgency, and it's the moral thing to do to take charge and to solve this, right? It's the scientists said that they're not equipped to do the changing of the hearts. That is what the church is called to do. How do we begin doing that? I know Pope Francis like lays out a million things that we should do, but what does he say is the key to that transformation in our hearts and in our minds?
One of the things that it's like the throwaway culture that you mentioned already. One of the things that we don't take time to do is to be quiet and look around and feel and see and experience what's around us in nature, because everything, the trees that grow, the birds that fly in the sky, the air that blows by us, all of those things are expressions of the will of God. God wants there to be a life and life in abundance. But if we're so busy driving our cars and getting to work and, you know, building up our empires, we miss these very simple things. And it seems to me the Pope would point very clearly to the need for all of us to be reflective people, meditative people, and that if we can do that, and our hearts are filled with love for those people who have yet to be born, as I say, the urgency of this becomes very real. So I think we need to become reflective people, and it's not an option, you know, it's not optional anymore. We've passed that point. This is a time that we need to get into action, but action guided by what we reflect on within ourselves and with others.
And with the Basilian Order, I think you guys are in a unique position because you have priests and you have your organization spread across, I mean, the entire Western Hemisphere. You have people in, I was going to say San Antonio, now people in Canada, people here in the United States, but then also all across Central and South America.
We're in Mexico and Colombia, yes.
Yeah, and so how do you begin walking in the same direction, right? We have people with different continents, people with different lived experiences, but we're still on the same earth. How do we begin walking in the same direction with different life experiences?
Well, you know, your point is well taken. It is the one same earth. I had one of the blessings of my position is that I've been asked by the congregation to look after the religious formation of our men who are studying for the priesthood. They're all right now studying in archdiocesan seminaries where men are being prepared for diocesan priesthood. So our guys who are religious are studying alongside folks who are studying strictly for the priesthood. So our men need a different kind of formation than the others do. And so the community has asked me to work not only with the folks in the States and Canada, but also, because I'm bilingual, with people in Mexico and Colombia. And I've been hearing from our young people, and some of them not so young actually, but for the people who are the future of our congregation, that this is a real concern, no matter what country we're in, because the air doesn't know the difference between Mexico and the United States and Canada. The temperature of the earth is what it is. We're sharing this earth, and when we're sharing a destiny and a future together. And so our younger people are quite aware, and this is an issue for them. It's a real one.
And I know this past year has been in many ways a setback, right? COVID-19 has kind of stopped and stalled kind of any initiatives or any new initiatives that most companies, most organizations have tried to put forward. And I imagine this has kind of stymied some of the growth in this area too. But it also serves as a wake-up call, right? The fact that the entire world is affected by this pandemic, and it was brought about by kind of environmental issues in a certain way, right? A lack of care for the environment and for creation is what caused this and puts us where we're at. What do we do with that lapsed time, but moving forward?
Well, we can learn from everything. And it's important that as educated people, we remember that. Because if we just flash by this as this will be over soon and I won't think about it anymore, we miss a very important message, I think. And that is that these things happen. Now, that sounds elementary. But in fact, if we make our great plans for what the future is going to be like and don't anticipate that some catastrophic kind of a thing can come in and eat up 18 months or 2 years of good planning, then we're really kind of in a bad place. Fortunately, with regard to the bazillions and our committee that I'm on, the first phase of what we're doing is a phase of gathering information from our local houses across the Western Hemisphere, as you say, and in France. We have a few men there. Just to get a sense of what they're already doing, what concerns they have, how they've been working on these issues or not so far. So this is the first step in this, which has been going for a year, is collecting that kind of data. And fortunately, we don't have to get together personally to do that. And so this pandemic hasn't hampered that too much. However, going forward and trying to create activities together and to participate in things that are already existing in our world, we don't have to recreate the wheel as bazillions or any other organization. I'm hoping that we can learn from this experience of the pandemic, but also finally be able to sit in rooms together and, you know, talk and get some things planned so that the third phase can be action. We can get into what we can do.
Okay. So the other day I was sitting in an interview with Father Philip, who's one of the head priests over at St. Teresa in Memorial. And one thing that he said that really stuck out to me was this entire time people have been trying to push to a return to normal. And he's like, I don't think we want that, right? He's like, we're in a time where a return to normal means a return to a lack of care for the earth, falling numbers in the church, along a big assortment of other things, right? And so I think using this time to kind of project and to build towards a future that we want is important for us to do. What is the future that the Basilians want?
Well, before I answer that, I want to speak to what my friend Father Philip said, because as this over a year ago, as we were really getting into this pandemic, I turned to someone and said, when this is over, our work is going to be different. You know, our world will be different. It's not just that you go out of business for a couple of weeks and come back and everything's the same. People won't have jobs. People will be either sick or getting over sickness. A lot about this world that we know now will be so different that our ministry is going to have to change too. And I still believe that's going to happen because we're not out of this pandemic yet. But what do we want? I would hope, you know, that this is in some way a wake-up call for us, and that we as a nation, but more importantly, as a world and as a church, can sit back and say, Lord, what is it that has brought about this catastrophic situation? What other catastrophic situations might be in the waiting for us? And how can we prepare ourselves by educating ourselves, by praying about this, by starting to think about what the Pope talks about so much, the common good? You know, how can we be concerned not only about how this affects me, but how does it affect a whole lot of other people? Even this whole idea of getting vaccinated nowadays, people think, well, if I get vaccinated, I'm fine. No, that's a good sidebar. But the important thing is, if you get vaccinated, then you can't pass this on to 16 other people. And they can't pass that on to 16 other people. And so the common good is a very practical thing for us to be thinking about, as well as a spiritual thing.
Yeah, I like that idea of thinking of the common good. I think, and you probably witnessed this in Hispanic ministry, right? I think in Texas, there's definitely a large segment of the population who thinks that way because we come from a large Hispanic population, a large Hispanic background, where everything's about the family, about the community.
Right.
And so I think in Texas, we still get that. In the U.S., I think there's pockets of that, but we're definitely way more of an individualistic society. And that is kind of what society is trying to drag us all into. I speak from experience. I grew up on the border, and I used to go to my grandmother's house every Sunday with 40 other of my relatives.
Exactly, of course.
I think that idea of shifting into a we is going to be extremely important for us, especially within the church, to continue to think of a we in the church, and not just an American we in the Catholic Church, but a global we of the people in Colombia, the people in Asia, the people in India, the people everywhere. Right. They're part of our church. They're part of the body of Christ, and we are going to serve them too, even if we will never meet them in this life. Like, we owe each other that responsibility. We owe each other that, because we're called to that and more.
Yeah.
So I think kind of getting into that mindset is a challenging thing to do, but I think it's a necessary thing to do. And here at the University of St. Thomas, we have that opportunity with our students, right? I know you work with campus ministry. In what ways is campus ministry trying to prepare and form the minds of our young people to go out into the world with that vision?
You know, as I say, I started here last August. I had been involved in campus ministry on a couple of different campuses over many years. But what I see in the way in which campus ministry is done here is very exciting to me. There's an emphasis, a very strong emphasis on developing the young leaders whose task it is, even as they're going through their semester, to collect other people in small groups to look at the scripture together, to talk about important issues, to pray about them together, to be small Christian communities, and then to build out from there, so that these people are getting the experience of creating small Christian communities, which is pretty much like what you were talking about. It's that whole community notion. It's what we need.
Mm-hmm.
And I am delighted to be part of a campus ministry that does things that way. It's a revolutionary thing, and it's very, very Catholic.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me of almost a proto family, right? It's an opportunity for them to create a nuclear family and practice what it means to be part of that community, to have your role within that, to serve them. And then when they realize the vocation of marriage and starting a family, they have the practice of service under their belt already.
Yep.
And they can better serve their children, their husbands, their wives.
That's right.
And those around them.
Well, you know, how to keep all these thoughts together in one conversation, but I also think not only of the family, but I think of the early church.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were only a few disciples and apostles in the earliest of the church. First there was Jesus, and then he called a few, and that grew and grew. And somehow each one of those early apostles and disciples got the message that it is my responsibility to form a group of people that we can pray together. It seems to me that as Catholics and at this university, we're beginning to get a taste of that. We need to have that early church energy again. And I'll tell you why. It's been my conviction for almost all these 40 years that the church ought to declare that the United States is mission territory.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have had such a history of the welcome. Now there obviously have been pockets where the Catholic Church has not been welcome, as you know, if you live in the South. But I mean, in a great part, the Catholics have been welcomed, and so welcomed that we become part of the American style of living.
Mm-hmm.
Some of that is wonderful, and some of that is really unfortunate, because we lose something of what it means to be community and Catholic, and gain in individualism, which can be troublesome. So if the United States has kind of fallen into a non-apostolic, no more reaching out kind of a sense of being Catholic,
mm-hmm.
then I think it would be wise to say, no, we're mission territory. All of you priests, now you're missionaries. All of you religious, now you're missionaries. So start getting busy as missionaries rather than just waiting for people to come to you. And I was taught this years ago when I studied in Mexico, they said, if you in the United States, when you go back, if you have people in Hispanic ministry and you wait for people who are used to a Latin American style of church to come to your church and be, receive what the church has to offer, they're not going to come. They expect the church to go to their house, to their door, to see them. And so what happens? You're waiting for them at church. They're waiting for you at the house. And who shows up at the door?
Somebody else.
Jehovah's Witnesses.
Yeah.
Right? And goodbye to our Catholic people. Mm-hmm. So I really think we need to kind of develop a different notion about who we are as a church and understand that this is an apostolic time.
Mm-hmm. I love that message. I firmly agree with you in that. Actually, when we were starting Max Studios, a conversation that I had with Bridget Richardson, who's one of our co-producers, she's on maternity leave currently. But the one conversation that we had was, this is a missionary venture because we are a missionary church. Because the United States is not a Catholic country. We are a Christian nation, but that is not a Catholic nation. And we need to evangelize, right? We need to reach people. We need to shape the culture because the culture is being shaped in another way. And so I think that's a strong message. And I think we oftentimes don't get that because we've been so accepted as, oh yeah, we're Christian too, but we need to be more than that. We need to go out. We need to share the church because we have the fullness of the truth here in the Catholic Church.
And that brings me back to what we're talking about today, because for people to have that kind of apostolic zeal, mm-hmm. they have to know that they, as they say here in Texas, they have a dog in the fight. And, you know, the whole idea of our common home, mm-hmm. the earth, and its habitability or not, means a whole lot to our younger people. And it means a lot to me, to be quite honest with you. And I hope other 65-year-olds feel that way. But if there's something in the moral teaching of the church that gets somebody charged up, we ought to jump on that and move with it and mm-hmm. get involved in the different things that are possible in our world to bring Catholic social teaching to the fore, rather than sit back and study it and say, oh, isn't that nice? You know, now, there are some wonderful things happening within the Catholic Church. There's a lot of religious communities who are already right out there on the forefront and doing a lot of good things. Mm-hmm. A lot of colleges and universities as well, and parishes and what have you. So, it's not like this isn't done already. It just seems like this is an opportune time for us to get in touch with a concern of our young people that really connects with our faith, and as faithful people move out into action.
Mm-hmm. I think so. So we're almost out of time, but before we go, what are some resources or what are some opportunities for our young people to begin to look more into this, to start to realize what they're called to do and what they can actually do in their communities, whether that's at UST or in the Houston area?
There are, interestingly enough, as you get out on the World Wide Web, there are a lot of good resources available. I have given you two of them. One is from one is called a Leader's Guide to Laudato Si, which is a wonderful thing. It's printed by National Catholic Reporter. And the other from the Catholic Climate Covenant, called A Summary of Laudato Si on Care for the Common Home. Both of them not only kind of give you a shorter version of Laudato Si, an insight into what Pope Francis so beautifully wrote, but also each of them recommends different activities that people can do that are easy to do and that would be done, again, in community, as we're talking about here, mm-hmm. rather than just one individual. So those are two easy things. But, you know, if you get out on the World Wide Web and you see what else is available and what kinds of things you might fancy more than these things, that's fine. If we can do something. And I would say, as Catholics, it would be important for us to consider working together. Bring your friends, bring your family, bring your favorite group and say, hey, let's do this thing together. That's really a proud way of being Catholic and making a difference in the world the way Jesus wants us to do.
Well, that's fantastic. Thank you so much for sitting down with me today, Father Paul. And I'm really excited to see what the Basilians go ahead and do moving forward. And then what our campus ministry does moving forward too. I do think this is one of the fights of our generation, and I hope that we rise to the occasion.
I'm with you. Thank you very much.
Who's that saint? Saint Basil the Great, the patron, but not the founder of the Congregation of Saint Basil or the Basilians. Saint Basil the Great is one of the doctors of the church. He was an influential theologian. He supported the Nicene Creed, the one that we say in Mass every Sunday. and opposed the heresies of the early church, including Arianism. This was the heresy which proposed that Jesus was created. In other words, that he was not divine, not co-eternal with God the Father, and therefore subordinate to the Father. The Nicene Creed states firmly, like, the belief in both the humanity and the divinity of Jesus. So Basil was born into a wealthy family in Cappadocia around the year 330. His parents, Basil the Elder and Aemilia of Caesarea, were known for their piety. And his maternal grandfather was a Christian martyr, executed before the conversion of Constantine. He had four siblings, Macrina the Younger, Necratius, Peter of Sabaeus, and Gregory of Nyssa, who are all venerated as saints too. No pressure. He received a formal education in Cappadocia and in Constantinople before practicing law and teaching rhetoric. However, Basil's life radically changed after he encountered Eustathius of Sebaste, a charismatic bishop and ascetic. He abandoned his legal and teaching career and instead devoted his life to God. He describes his spiritual awakening in this way. "I had wasted much time on follies and spent nearly all of my youth in vain labors and devotions to the teachings of a wisdom that God had made foolish. Suddenly, I awoke as out of a deep sleep and beheld the wonderful light of gospel truth, and I recognized the nothingness of the wisdom of the princes of this world." After his baptism, Basil traveled to Palestine, Egypt, Syria, and Mesopotamia to study asceticism and monasticism. But he eventually realized that while he respected the ascetic's piety and prayerfulness, the solitary life did not call him. Basil instead felt drawn toward communal religious life, and by 358, he was gathering around him a group of like-minded disciples, including his brother Peter. Together, they founded a monastic settlement on his family's estate near Annecy. Basil is remembered as one of the most influential figures in the development of Christian monasticism. Not only is Basil recognized as the father of Eastern monasticism, historians recognize that his legacy extends also to the Western Church, largely due to his influence on Benedict.
If you made it this far, thank you for sticking with us. This whole project is a labor of love, but we want to hear from y'all. How are you being called to protect our world? Let us know. Hit us up on social at Kelp Campus Men and at Max Studios UST on Instagram and Facebook. Share this with your friends, family, coworkers, classmates, the crunchiest person you know. You've been listening to Protagonists of Change. I'm Max Linville. Until next time, peace out.